a long time, but the last couple weeks have really kind of brought it back to the forefront of my mind. 2 weeks ago, Sunday morning, when Dana was here kind of leading discussion on discipleship, kind of made me think, come back to this again. And then last week, Alice and I were away for our anniversary, and we were up in the mountains, and Sunday morning we listened to part of a chapter from A.W. Tozer's Attributes of God. We only made it about halfway through, and I was like, stop, we got to talk about this. So kind of interesting. I came back, and Mike and I were talking on Thursday, and he's like, hey, you need to listen to Dana's message from Sunday, because that's exactly what he was talking about too. So apparently God's doing something. I don't know. So I wasn't sure how exactly to go about this, because in some ways this is something I'm still very much working through. This is not something that I have mastered or figured out. So I think what I'm going to do is kind of give you guys some background on my story about this particular subject and how God has brought me to where I am now. And then I want to hear your guys' thoughts on what does this look like and how does this work? So and it's really, really kind of a big topic, but it's the idea of relationship with God. What in the world does that look like? So the thing that kind of triggered this when we were down in Colorado Springs, actually, Tozer was talking about the immanence of God was the attribute that he was talking about. He was talking about the, you know, we understand the omnipresence of God, that God is everywhere, but we so often miss the immanence of God, that God is near to me, that God is here, that God is present. And as part of that, which that in and of itself is a topic we could spend a lot of time on, he used this phrase, and he said, so many of us are theological Christians. We have this doctrine, this understanding, this knowledge of who God is. And somehow that's separate from our understanding of how life works. And I was thinking that through, that really kind of puts it, I like the way he worded that, theological Christian. I love theology. Theology is fun. Theology, the study of God, the discussion of who God is and how he works and how he has worked and what that means for morality and all those things, that's a lot of fun. I love that. But do I stop there? I was thinking about this, and I listened to Dana's talk last week, and he was talking about the people that pick up the stones to stone Jesus are the people who believe. The people who pick up the stones. It says, those who believed in him, he talked to them, and then they picked up stones and said, oh no, you don't. You cannot claim to be God. Yeah, you're good. Yeah, you're got good things to say, but you cannot claim to be God. I can't take that step. That is too imminent to me. That is too close. And I was thinking even about the Pharisees. We vilify the Pharisees. They're the bad guys in the story. And that's because of our perspective. Those who first read these stories, the Pharisees are the good guys. The Pharisees are the heroes. The Pharisees, where they came from was during the Maccabean Revolt, which is where the Greeks come in and say, forget it. You're not worshiping your God anymore. You're going to worship our God. We're going to take a pig. We're going to sacrifice it on the altar and defile it so you can never use it again. And the Pharisees were a group of people that said, absolutely not. That is not what God says. That is not what God allows. We will not allow it. And they revolted and they fought in a hopeless war and won by the power of God. They're the good guys. They're the ones that did what Israel should have done every single time they were tempted with idolatry. We see it over and over and over again in the Old Testament where someone comes in and says, hey, go worship this God. And they say, okay, and they go along. We're like, you guys, why? Again. The Pharisees were the ones that stood up and said, no, we won't do that again. No, absolutely not. So I'm not saying that they are perfect, good people. What I'm saying is they're the heroes in our eyes. They should be, as far as our perspective tends to go. We're, with things that we look at, they were moral. I mean, they were immensely moral for the most part. There was definitely some stuff that they did. But they knew the law of God. They knew it. They memorized it. They didn't just read it every day. They memorized it. They were the ones that constantly said, no, don't go there. That's what God says not to do. Don't do it. Don't do it. So much so that they said, okay, well, here's the line. We're going to put a rule here and a rule here and a rule here and a rule here so that we don't even come close. And we understand that that's a misunderstanding of the purpose of the rule in the first place. But these guys, they were perceived as the heroes, the leaders. These were the ones who, it's kind of like today when we say, oh, I wish I could be a missionary or an evangelist, but I'm not spiritual enough for that. Back then it was, I wish I could be a Pharisee, but I'm not spiritual enough for that. That was the perception. And we look at them as the bad guys, but that's not how they were perceived. They had good theology for the most part. They were moral people. They were good people. And then they crucified Jesus. And that's scary for someone who loves theology and loves to think these things through. That I can have good theology, that I can have a good understanding of who God is, and still crucify Jesus. Being a theological Christian is a dangerous thing. Being someone who understands and knows who God is a dangerous thing if it's missing one very important thing, and that's God Himself. The Spirit of God, and Dana talked about the Spirit of God guides us into all truth, and without Him, we are hopelessly lost. We will crucify Jesus. We will stone Jesus, because Jesus does not fit my understanding. He doesn't, because He's God. He's infinite, and by definition, that means I cannot understand Him. So, I started thinking this through, this idea of having an understanding of God, but not actually knowing God, probably back in high school. And it really kind of came out even more so when I went to IMI's International Ministerial Institute school down in Texas. I spent a year and a half down there. And coming back between semesters, Mike and I started talking about this idea of mental ascent, the idea of saying, giving that mental acknowledgement, yes, I know this is true, but then that's as far as it goes. I never do anything with it. I never act on it. I just, yeah, I know it's true. Put it up on the shelf, move on with my life. And as I've thought about it, this idea of being a theological Christian almost takes that a step further. It's, yes, I know it's true. I'm going to put it over here. But you know what? I can't just set it over there, because if it is true, then I have to act on it. Okay, so I'm going to take what I know to be true and figure out a way to actually kind of act like it's true. And that seems good. Okay, so we're acting on what we believe. But it's still missing that key component. The Pharisees acted on what they believed. Actually, very, very much so. Very, very much so. And if we're honest, if what they believed was true, they did what was right. If Jesus was not God, what's the right response? Kill Him. Absolutely. He claims to be God. If He is not God, He deserves to die. Absolutely no questions asked. So the Pharisees had a belief system. It says, if you claim to be God and you're not, you ought to die. They acted on that belief system. So where did they go wrong? They missed God Himself. How do I not miss God Himself? How do I recognize God when He is outside of what I expect Him to be? Because believe me, He will be a lot. And it comes back to the relationship where we started, that idea of I know God and I know what he sounds like. And even when he doesn't look like what I expect him to, I still can recognize him because I know him. I don't just know about him, because my knowledge about him will always be flawed, but I know him. So as I started thinking through this idea of the separation between my knowledge of God and knowing God, and I started thinking through, so what, how do I approach God? What is the mode in which I think of God? I came across a story in a book that really challenged the way that I approach God and truth, and really that everything, the truth in general. And I can't probably retell it as well as it was told in the original story in the book, but I'm going to go ahead and try to tell the story just a little bit here. So story's about a guy named Henry. He was raised by a wealthy family, and educated in the best schools, and was in his late 20s, up and coming in the business world and becoming very powerful, very wealthy. Lived in New York City and was really looked like he was going to be one of the big movers and shakers. And he was about 28 or so. He was one day walking through town, and came across a guy in an alley getting mugged. And this guy was getting beaten up, and Henry had a little bit of just some history with some of his family, some stuff that had happened there. And he got super, super angry and went in and he beat this mugger to a pulp. In fact, he killed the guy. And he freaked out, realized what he'd done, realized that he couldn't even justify this. It was just self-defense. He had gone far beyond where he should have. And instead of turning himself in, he ran. And he disappeared, left everything behind, and spent the next 30 years of his life on the run. Just moving from place to place, never staying anywhere very long, never really getting to know anybody very well, always taking jobs that he could kind of get in and out of without a lot of training, didn't really have to interact with people. About 30 years later, he finds himself working as a janitor in a high-rise office building in Chicago. And, he's kind of gotten to the point, he kind of came to the point where he was content with what he was doing. Maybe not content, but had settled for his life. He knew there wasn't really ever going to be a chance for that to change. He could never go back to where he was before. And one night, he was kind of just finished up work and was kind of sitting, taking a break. He's getting a little bit older. And he's got his, metal muck bucket and all his stuff next to him. And he's sitting there and he's kind of just thinking back over the last 30 years and what he's been doing and why and what's the point. And here's somebody calling his name. Looks around and there's not anybody there. And that was probably the security guys. I mean, they like to play pranks. So gets up and starts walking down the hall. And then he hears the voice behind him and turns around and there's nobody there. It's an open hall. It's just him and his mop bucket. And he's kind of like, what's going on? And he looks over at his mop bucket and sees steam coming out of it. And that should be cooled off by now. And he goes over and starts looking at it and he realizes the water in his mop bucket is boiling. Not only that, but the bucket itself has started to glow red hot. And he hears a voice and it comes from the mop bucket and it says, take off your shoes, Henry, you're standing on holy tile. That seems so silly to us. It seems so silly to us. Why? We know this story, and we're so familiar with it. We're okay. Moses in a burning bush. You know, he's a shepherd in the desert with a burning bush. Yeah, that's great. I'm good with that. But if it's Henry in a mop bucket, in our time, that's close to us, that's got proximity to me? Wait a second. No. That's silly. Dana talked last week about suspending our disbelief. And there's multiple sides to that. One is, when I come across something that someone says, this is true, and I say, oh no, it's not. Stop. Okay, I don't believe that. But what if it is true? I have to set aside that instinctive defense and say, okay, I'm not going to just throw out everything that I believe to be true, but I have to, if what I believe is true, it will stand up to question. So I have to be willing to question and say, okay, this is being presented to me as true. Is it? And I suspend my disbelief for the purpose of finding what is actually true. But there's another side to it, and that is where we suspend our disbelief when we shouldn't. When I read the story of Moses and the burning bush, I have a tendency to suspend my disbelief. I have a tendency to take that on the same level as I take Lord of the Rings or Avengers, because it doesn't fit with my understanding of the world. So I claim to believe it to be true, but then I set it aside as something not. It's a Bible story. I remember I told this story to a 7th and 8th grader class that I taught when I was just out of high school. And I remember very vividly one of the guys, and I tend to come back and kind of pick on him, but honestly, he said what everyone was thinking. But I asked him after I told the story, when did you guys pick up that was Moses in the burning bush? And you know, one of them was like, oh, I figured it out right away. One was like, oh, I didn't even realize till the end. And one of them, this kid's like, well, I was listening to it and I was trying to figure out, is this a real story or a Bible story? And then I figured it out. And I was like, that is exactly the point. That is exactly the point. And I'm not picking on you, because that is exactly what I did when I heard this story. Is this a real story or a Bible story? Is this a real story or just an illustration, you know? Part of the reason why my theology is so separated from my normal life is because I don't actually believe it. I don't actually believe that God spoke to a shepherd named Moses out of a burning bush. I don't actually believe that Peter walked on water. Seriously, if anything, I mean, that should definitely make me take pause, but it doesn't. I read right past it. Do I actually believe what I claim to believe? Or am I just a theological Christian? And then the scary thing is, I do this with God himself. Do I actually believe in God? Or do I just hold that as an interesting story or a good story or something that you know, I can build some morality off of? Do I look at that as actually real? Do I look at him as actually real? Sometimes I look at what we claim to believe. It, by all rights, in our culture, to a Western mind, which we have Western thinking, all of us do, we were raised in a Western culture, it's superstition. By all rights, we believe in a spirit that is all-powerful, all-knowing, and everywhere at once, who created the world in 7 days, who not only that, but has directed the course of all of history. This is a spirit we're talking about. And then became human, died for our sins, and rose again from the dead physically after 3 days. It's superstition. Except for one thing. It's true. If it is not true, then we're a bunch of superstitious hypocrites who really would do better to forget it and leave and go do something fun. It's true. It has to be. If it's not, what's the point? And if it is, why don't we believe it? So that was a big part of my journey, was realizing that I often don't believe what I claim to believe. And once I realized that, I had to ask myself, okay, so if what I believe is true, is actually true, what does that mean? What does that look like? What should that actually happen? And this separation between my theology, my real life, became very apparent. And I realized that my perception of becoming more spiritual or a better Christian was actually to step out of reality even more so. So you have your real life box and your Christian box. And my perception of what becoming more spiritual was to forget the real life box and spend all your time in the spiritual box. And when you're reading your Bible and praying and thinking spiritual thoughts. And in so doing, I wasn't actually fixing the problem of the separation. I was just trying to spend my time in this box over here that was separate, when it should be the same thing. My real life and my life with God, there's no difference. There shouldn't be. There shouldn't be any separation there, because if God is real, then he touches everything. If he's not, then don't waste your time. So, I've spent some time thinking this through, and as I kind of come towards the end of this first time through, I came to a place where I said, okay, so what does relationship with God mean? What does it mean when we use that phrase? You know, you hear that all the time, and there's still part of me that there's that one, that phrase is used evangelistically, that you can have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And that one grates on me, because what I hear is you can pray a prayer, your ticket's punched, you gotta live the life, and then you go to heaven when you die. And that's what I hear. And that's not what relationship is. That's not what relationship with Jesus Christ actually is. And that phrase, even though I've fought this for 6 years in my thinking, that phrase still brings that image up to me. So what is relationship with Jesus Christ? What is relationship with God? What does it actually mean? And as I was thinking this through, I started doing this exercise in my head, and I've tried to do this consistently since then. And that is, look at the illustration. God says, the church is the bride of Christ. Okay, so we have bride and groom. Okay, well, we put that in our spiritual box. And we don't think about what that actually means. But over here, we have our real life box, and we know exactly what that means. Same thing is true of the word relationship. When we put that in our spiritual box, we have no idea what that means. Or at least I don't. I forget so easily. But if you take that out of the spiritual box and put it in real life, okay, what does it mean to have a relationship? What does it mean to be in a relationship? What does it mean to relate to someone? We know exactly what that means. It means you spend time with them. It means you get to know them. You learn about them. But not just for the sake of knowing about them, for the sake of being able to get to know them more, for the sake of being able to spend time with them. You spend time, you invest. Even the phrase spending time with someone. When I say the phrase spend time with God, what's the first thing that pops into your head? Good. Good. And that's where I'm getting. For me, the first thing that pops into my head, and again, I've been fighting this for, this one's probably been fighting for probably 10 years. I've been fighting this for a long time. The first thing that pops into my head when someone uses that particular phrase is, I picture sitting in a corner with a Bible. Is that spending time with God? Can be, absolutely. But is that the summation of all that is spending time with God? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that's where back to the beginning again, Tozer's concept of the eminence of God. My theology says God is everywhere. My real life says, I don't know. But God is here. God is with me. And I remember a book I read at IMI, and I don't remember much about it, but I remember this one phrase stood out because he used it again and again. And that was, God is with you. Are you with him? God is everywhere. Of course God is with me. God has promised never to leave me. Of course God is with me. But am I with him? Am I practicing the presence of God? Am I actually being in his presence? Am I actually with him? Am I spending time with him? What does it mean when I say spend time with your friends? We take that entirely differently than we say spend time with God. But it shouldn't be, because we've separated out these two boxes. And when I picture spending time with friends, I picture, you know, food in the corner on a table and hanging out and playing games or watching a movie or, you know, talking. That's what I picture. And for some reason, I take that same phrase and apply it to God, and I mean something entirely different. So as I started thinking that through, I realized how very separate those things were and how much I misunderstood the concept of relationship. Relationship is based on experience. When you become friends with somebody, usually it doesn't start with, although it can, but it doesn't usually start with, let's sit down and have a deep philosophical discussion about life. Usually it starts with, hey, let's go take a hike together, or let's go hang out and talk about sports or games or whatever. It doesn't start with that really deep thinking connection that we think of. It's spending time. It's getting to know somebody in context of living life together. You know, and then you go even a step further, the concept of marriage. And that's the picture that God uses. That's more than just, hey, we hang out every once in a while. That's life together. That's everything we do, we're connected in. Everything we do is context for relationship. Everything we do. So I guess I kind of started working through that and separating, realized how much those boxes were separate. And I've been working a little bit, hopefully, quite a bit, the last few years on trying to break down some of those walls and tie that together. So kind of in a roundabout way, that's somewhat my story of how I've kind of started working through. And I say started because I feel like I'm really still a long way away from really understanding that. But I find that I tend to be the theological Christian. I tend to be the person, and this is kind of my story right now. I'm realizing that I have seen God. I have had real relational, if you will, experience with God. And yet I still tend, and over the last few years especially, I tend to be content with knowing about God and not knowing God himself. And there's a difference, there's a very big difference between knowing about God and knowing God. Knowing God is not possible if God is not real. And that's why I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about how often we don't believe that God is real. If God is actually real, I can actually know him and actually interact with him the way I would anyone else. And so relationship means the same thing. If God is not real, then relationship maybe means a little bit closer to what I tend to think of it as. But at that point, there's no point anyways. So I guess in some ways this is a little bit of a confession from me. And God has really been working in me the last couple weeks to change this, to go back to where I've been, but not just back to where I've been, but to where he wants me now. And that's part of why I say I don't know that I'm ready to teach this. But there's my story. There's how I have come to where I am. So I guess the question that I have that I want your input on is, what does relationship with God look like to you? What? So both philosophically, how does that work? What does that look like? What's your understanding of it? And more importantly, how has that looked for you? Where have you seen God? Where God has been real and not just an idea, not just a theological concept. Now it's your turn.
The realest place I've ever seen God is working with people to love people who are hard to love. Mm-hmm. Making myself uncomfortable, like something that I don't necessarily want to do for the sake of helping somebody else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Raspberries?
Okay. Amen. Let's go.
this one time, I mean, to be fair, there's a million stories, and most of them won't make any sense.
Absolutely.
I mean, just like, how do you know your friends like you? And then that's putting it out. You know, like, I know. I can't tell you how I know, but I know. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But I don't even remember the details. I don't remember the details of why it was like, I was going on a prayer hike, as my friend would call it, which I don't know that I would use that word. But anyway, that's what I did. And I was talking to God the whole time, and, you know, and kind of got to the top of where I was going, and sat there and, you know, just waiting for, you know, I say for God to show up, but I think it's more for me to realize that he's already there. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, I think, okay, this was cool. Like, I got it. I understand what's going on and what I need to do. And so I started walking down. And there on the side of the trail were wild raspberries. And I think I had seen, so back up. So part of this journey was fasting. So I didn't eat anything and then went for a hike, which of course was fine. and anyway, so I'm walking down and I'm like, well, I saw some raspberries on the way up, actually. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get those raspberries. I'm like, I don't know, like, this is a fasting thing. We're not going to do that. So I get to the top and, like, have this thing where I'm like, okay, whatever God needed to, like, pummel into my brain, like, finally made it. And so I'm like, okay, good, this is good. So I'm walking down now, like, looking for raspberries. Like, well, now I'm looking for raspberries, right? And either I didn't remember where I'd seen them, or they weren't there anymore, or they were hidden from view, or whatever. Like, oh, well, okay, that's fine. I don't really have to have raspberries. But it was one of those things where, like, I basically stopped looking. Mm-hmm. I stopped looking for raspberries. And then there they were. Wild raspberries. I don't know if there's anything better in all of creation than wild raspberries. They're fantastic.
Yep.
And part of the charm is that there aren't a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. you can't just, like, gorge yourself on wild raspberries. Like, there's maybe three. Mm-hmm. And that's what you get. And it was one of those things where it was stupid. It was like, why would you go out of your way to point out raspberries? But, you know, you think about that whole concept that God knows your needs before you can even ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he knows how to impress upon you that he's real and he's there and he cares about you. And, you know, how many things had to come together? You know, the seed and the planting and the growing and the sunshine and the rain and the, you know, the shadow of the rock and, like, all of those things had to be perfect. That's not something that you just, like, oh, whoops, I have to put that through. Mm-hmm. Like, there was preparation in there. God knew that was there for me,
mm-hmm.
long before I ever knew to even think about
that
through. And so to me, that was like, again, it's like a stupid thing. Like, in the telling, it, there's like one billionth of what the actual impression of
was. Yeah.
But it was like, God's not only real, but he's concerned. And he's concerned about stupid things. Like, I could live the rest of my life and never have another raspberry, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but God, you don't have to.
Yeah.
You don't have to live without raspberries, because I know that you like them.
Mm-hmm.
So here's some raspberries to remind you that not only am I willing to beat something into your head that you need to learn, but I'm also willing to give you things that you like just because you like them.
Yeah.
And that for me was one of the many moments.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so clearly this is real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly there's more to it than, you know, than what I often with my life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. The realness of it, and that something that think of. Okay, so the idea of relationship, and to Jesus' disciples, the idea of having a relationship with Jesus was very different than ours. You know, think about it. When you go camping with somebody. You know, some of you don't like camping, but when you go camping with somebody, you kind of get to know them pretty well because you're out in the middle of nowhere and there's not a lot of normal life stuff. So you find yourself in an entirely different context where you have to live life in a very different way, and you're much closer to just surviving than you are to what we think of as normal. Jesus camped with his disciples pretty much all the time. They hiked all over the place. They spent time together, and it wasn't this constant Sermon on the Mount. It was life together, and Jesus lived real life. And he lived it maybe in a different way than we do, because he lived it in full submission to the Spirit, but at the same time, he lived life. You know, he had to go behind a bush to relieve himself. He spent his time with his disciples. He, you know, the story where he has breakfast with them on the beach after his resurrection. He cleaned a fish. He cleaned a couple fish. I mean, he lived real life. He was real and eminent to them. And when they think of Jesus, they don't think of this theological concept. They think of this guy that I hung out with for 3 years. And now his spirit lives in me. It's very different than our perception. Your story reminds me of one of my experiences with God. And that was at IMI. I was out. We do afternoon meditation, basically go out and hike and spend time with God. And I carried a little Bible with me, and I was out walking and got out. I was probably a good half mile from the closest shelter, and a Texas thunderstorm started rolling in, and it can pour in Texas. Like, it rains here, but it does not rain like it does there. And I saw the rain coming, and it actually started to rain, and I was like, God, I don't want to get soaked, and I've got my Bible with me. I don't want that to get soaked. Can you please hold the rain? And it stopped raining. And so, like, okay, well, I better hurry back. And so I'm heading back, and the front, the house is up on a hill. There's these steps up and this covered porch thing. And I got to the bottom of the steps, and it started dumping rain. And I ran up the last couple steps and didn't really get wet. And, like, within 3 minutes, there was water running down the hill. I mean, it started pouring. And it was just kind of okay, wow. God is very real and very present. And again, like you say, I mean, that story doesn't even convey a hundredth of the impact of God being there for me. My theology says God answers prayer. My experience also says that God answers prayer because I've seen it. What else? Where have you seen God? Christy?
Be reminded of that. Right now, I'm really only thinking of the kind of awkward, uncomfortable ones. I know. Have I think for me, that was a time when I was at Against Self, which is a program in Texas that I went to. Intensive discipleship, leadership, knowing God stuff. And at the time, they just had a leadership turnover that was run by three girls who were basically my age, who did not know what they were doing. And it was kind of a mess in a lot of ways, but they did know how to listen to God. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how everything was so disjointed and weird and awkward in so many ways, but yet we all met God when we were there. And I have so many specific moments that were totally pivotal in my relationship with God that happened there, even though a lot of my other memories of it aren't so great in a lot of ways. But one of the things in Advanced Excel was that we were required every day to spend an hour alone with God. It was called our Date with God time. And it was definitely so encouraged. This is not you sit there and read your Bible. This is you do whatever you need to do. You go by yourself. Do what you need to do to know God, to find God, to seek God, to be quiet before Him, to say, you know, whatever it happens to be that day. You know, it was every day for 8 weeks. Was that there that long? Maybe I was, I don't know. Anyway, every day we had an hour, and it was seek God, know God. I loved the term date with God. You know, it was you build a relationship. And that intensive time, that was when I heard God the best. And that's a struggle for me now, because I do believe that you don't have to have tons of quiet time to know God. But that one-on-one time building relationship was huge. And I know some of that can also be phase of life. Some of it is I need to structure my life better to get more of that time. Anyway, but that was the time I heard God. And it was weird things sometimes and unexpected things. And it was beautiful things. And the way we were able to encourage each other and encourage each other to hear from God. And when one of us was going, okay, I think God is saying this. And we could encourage each other to jump on that and to support each other in that. And there were so many times when, you know, you would hear things coming out of your mouth and you don't even know where that's coming from. I remember one time going back to my room and calling Jonathan, who is at IMI, and being like, I just told my friend that, is that even biblical? I didn't know God, but that was a weird thing to say. What did you think of this, you know? And so many things like that. It was like, God is there. Mm-hmm. And then coming home, and I made it a practice to have a date day with God, where I would just, like, leave the house and start driving. And it was, God, where do you want to go? And it was so weird. It was so weird and awkward sometimes. And where do you want me to go? What should I do? What should, you know? And just that kind of, like, drive the car and knowing that God didn't have to do that. And that mm-hmm. He was in us. And that our choices, as we sought Him, were His. But, you know, having that one day a week, it was, like, practice to me mm-hmm. in listening for God. Mm-hmm. And there were things like, what about you? Maybe that was you. Okay, we'll try that. And if it wasn't you, well, then you tell me. But I am listening for you. So it's not wrong to hear something and wonder if it was God and go for it. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day, your hiking story, and you think of this, one day I ended up at the Round Mountain. My health was not good at that point. I was, you know, had chronic stomach pain and was shaky all the time and easily dizzy, and God told me to go hiking, and I felt like it was a really unsafe thing, and my mom would probably not be happy with me. So I went hiking, and I went up to this place where we go spend some time, and a lot of them would go bouldering up the side of the mountain there, and I never did because my balance is really bad when I'm not feeling good. And God told me to go up the side of this mountain. I'm like, no way, no, really. This does not make sense. This is not safe. No one knows I'm up here. You know, mom and dad know that I do this and I have to stay, but they don't know where I go, you know. There's no cell service there anyway. I'm like, this is a bad idea. But, you know, it's constantly, could that really be God? You know, maybe it's not. What if it's not and I get hurt and it wasn't God? And I feel like God kept telling me, you are listening for me. So go for it. Go for it. I'm not going to let you do something stupid because you were looking for me, you know. And so I started up the side of this mountain, so shaky, and went a little ways and was like, okay, that's good enough. I went back down, and you got a little ways down the trail, and I felt like God just had stopped. Mm-hmm. And I sat down right there in the middle of the trail for probably 5 to 10 minutes, and just sat there breathing really hard and shaking. And God said, that wasn't enough. I wanted more. I wanted to show you more. Mm-hmm. And so I went back. I went climbing up this mountain again, and I'm so bad at that. And feet are sliding and terrified. And it was, God, what in the world? What is the point of this? This is so stupid. Why would you want this? And it went a little farther. I don't even remember how high I got. Probably wasn't really that high. You know, I just thought it wasn't. And finally God said, okay, it's time to go back down. And just those kinds of moments that I don't know why, but beyond, I was listening to God. I was listening. And that practice in listening to God helped me to hear him the rest of the week. Helped me to hear him. I mean, to this day, I think those moments of intense time of God helped me to still be able to hear him in the midst of my chaos and limited time that I spend. And that is huge to me. That I had to practice. I had to look for him. Even when it felt stupid, even when I wasn't sure it was him, I still had to go for it. Because if it wasn't, I didn't want to miss out.
Yeah.
But there was something else. I don't remember. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. A couple things that you said just made me think about this idea that if God is real, why do I not expect him to speak to me? I ask a question and don't expect an answer. How does that make sense? If I actually believe in God, if I ask a question, I need to listen for an answer. And that's something that I'm being challenged again on. I told you guys a couple weeks ago that I struggle with that right now, and I am practicing again. And it's awkward at first. It's super awkward at first, because is that God? No, it's not God. Yeah, it is God. Well, am I sure? But is it not? Well, what if it's not? And well, what if it is? And that struggle to hear the voice of God. And you know, for me, it's not an audible voice. For some people, maybe it is. For some people, it's just an impression. For me, it's that little voice in the back of your head that's always talking. Sometimes God steps in and says, hey, I'm going to take control of that for a minute, and speaks to me. And it's different than when it's just that voice in my head. And it's, it feels silly sometimes. It really does. It's like, wait, why? I don't get this. Why am I climbing a rock? This doesn't make sense. And sometimes it's because God has something else going on, and you're going to meet somebody at the top of that rock that you need to talk to. And sometimes it's because you need practice listening. And sometimes it's to remind you that he can keep you safe even when you're in a spot that doesn't make sense. The other thing, as you talk about just being in a different place of life now, is something else that I've been thinking about. And expecting to hear the voice of God is really the big thing that God is working with me on, and I'm trying to practice right now. And again, pray for me in that as God brings it to mind, because it is a struggle. But the other thing is that different times in life, God acts differently. God speaks differently. And I can't expect him to always sound the same, because he's bigger than that. And I mean, just going through as I kind of getting ready for today, going through all of the times that I've seen God before. I think of the part of the T.S. Lewis's Horse and His Boy. Toward the end of the story, this kid's been through all these horrible things and comes to the end of the story, and he meets Aslan, who is Jesus in this story world, and he says, you know, we were chased by lions, and we almost got attacked by wild animals in the desert, and I got lost, and then we got attacked by another lion, and at least it's bad luck to meet so many lions. And Aslan says, no, there was only one lion. I was the lion that forced you to join with your companion. I was the lion that drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion that gave your horses the extra speed of fear to make it in time for the last mile. And I was the lion you don't remember who pushed that boat to shore that you were in, a child near death, so that it came to rest where somebody was waiting to see God all the way through my life, where I see him and where I don't. To look back and see, that was you, wasn't it? And that was you. And that was you. And it didn't look like you at the time. And it looked, and then I saw you and I figured out who you were. And then something else happened. It was like, oh man, God, that's you too, isn't it? Looking back and seeing the hand of God, taking the time to do that is really valuable. And I haven't done that enough recently. And having done that this week, wow. And then one more thing with that, and that is, we often expect God to speak in the big ways, in the big things. And you know, Mike loves to tell the story of Elisha and the mountain and I'm the only one left, God. Just take me now because everyone else hates you. I'm the only one that loves you. And God comes and says, listen to me. I speak differently than you expect. I'm not in the fire, although I am sometimes. I'm not in the wind, although I am sometimes. I'm not in the earthquake, although I am sometimes. But right now I'm whispering. And Elisha said, no, I don't want to hear you that way. I don't want to hear you that way. I want the big stuff. I only want the big stuff. And God says, okay, fine. Take your mantle and pass it to the next one. God often whispers, and you know, we tell these stories of, you know, God holding back the rain, or God telling you to go climb a rock, or God miraculously providing raspberries for you. And in some ways, that's normal life. That's the way it works when you listen to God. And in some ways, it's all the little things that you don't remember. It's all the little things that you don't see. And the difference in relationship and just theology is being aware of the eminence of God in the little things. Being aware of, and I mean, in some ways you could argue, okay, strawberry or raspberries on the side of the trail. That could be a little thing, but it was the presence of God. So, first of all, I want to challenge all of us, myself included, to look for God, to expect to see God. If God is real, which he is, expect to see him, expect to hear him, expect to find him, because he promises if you look for him, you will find him. And secondly, remind all of us that God is not just in the big things. He's also in the little things. He's also in that little day-to-day, everyday thing. And if you don't hear the voice of God, okay. Find God where you can and listen for his voice where you don't hear it. Because he's there. We know he's there. Our theology says he's there. He's everywhere, of course. Find him. Find him there. So that's what I've got. What else do we have?
One thing that I have to constantly remind myself is that, and this goes back to the suspicion of belief, but you know, we have our theology and a lot of Christian stuff. But it's one of the things God's really impressed on me is the intersection of how our relationship. We tend to think that we have this weird ethereal picture of how our relationship of God is supposed to look like, and how speaking to God is supposed to look like, and how practicing or hearing is supposed to look. But when in reality, it's very much like real life.
Yeah, it is.
You know.
Yeah.
Practicing with hearing God is going to look exactly like real life.
It is.
And you will fail. How you trying out scales on a piano, you're not going to do it perfect from then on, period, every time. No, you will fail listening to God. And it's okay. God's not going to fault you for trying to hear him. Oh, you messed up. I'm going to talk to you again. You know, what type of God would you be? But it's as you practice, you will get better. I mean, it's inevitability. And the other thing is, how much of practice starting out in anything looks good. Art. I mean, did your first drawings look good? Did your first scales sound good the first time you tried drawing your Tai Chi or whatever? Does your form look good? It looks terrible.
Awkward.
And that's what we look at these giant, you know, these giants of the faith or whatever, and we say, oh, look at that. That's amazing. I could never do that.
Yeah.
Well, at some point, they started out with scales and with taking the jacket off, putting it up, taking it off. and that's one of the things. Sure. I'm impressed. These stories, you know, a lot of times you hear these. God said, go climb a mountain. And it sounds stupid, but it's practice. And it gets you somewhere in the end that here's a big thing. I guess that's the thing that I want to hang. And for me, where that was impressed was reading through the Bible and reading, you know, these prophets and stuff. You know, this one was told to marry a prostitute. How in the world, if God ever called me, would I even know if that was him?
Yeah.
You know, for the majority of people, that could be sin.
Uh-huh.
You know? Or the one prophet who God commanded for what? A whole year?
Two years
to walk naked around the city? God, and that was God, so it wasn't sin. But how many of us would hear something radical like that unless we were practicing? Mm-hmm. You know? God was, you know, Jesus on earth feasting and eating with sinners and had a horrible, what looked like a horrible reputation, but it was because who was in direct communication with Jesus. And that's the one thing that impressed upon me about having the relationship was that, like, if God needed, well, not that he needed you to do anything, but if God wanted me to do something like that, how would I know?
Mm-hmm.
How would I know if I was listening to the point where if I did something like that, because it's a fine line, doing something like that between sin and following the will of God. And a lot of people will look at you and say, oh, that's sin. But unless you know what, unless you're in communication with God and know directly, you just know, as Dana puts it, you won't know whether, you know, so it's all about that practice. And it's been horrible and messy because we are who we are.
Yeah.
I like the point about, you know, you start with the little things because that's where life is, but it's also, you know, what you can do. Oh God, should I, you know, move to Mongolia? If I don't know what God sounds like, that's probably not the first thing to start with. If you get that wrong, that could be, you know, big ramifications. You know, God, what should I eat today, or what should I wear today, or something simple that, well, if I get it wrong, I can try again tomorrow and it's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. I mean, it's like everything else. You know, we start off with the little things. I'm reminded of the parable of the talents, which I think we probably misinterpret a lot. But just the concept of, like, you know, God gives you what you're able to handle. And he says, okay, do what you know how to do with this. And, well, I don't know how to manage 10 things at once. I know that. That's why I'm giving you one. So why don't you manage that one thing and let him manage the 10 things? You can just manage one. And then when that experience and that practice is over, it's like, okay, you did well with this little much, now you get more. Well, I just figured out how to do that. You know, so now you get to practice with more things, with other things, with bigger things. And that, I mean, that's how it works. And a lot of times, you know, we measure ourselves against the heroes of the faith when they're at their best. You know, it's like Pinterest, right? You measure yourself against the best that anyone could ever possibly produce and say, well, I can't do that. Well, no kidding. They couldn't either on their first try.
Yeah.
You know, which is where you get the fail army, which is, I compare myself to that.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I feel a little bit when, you know, I maybe did it to myself a little bit. I asked that, where do you see God? And we hear these stories. And I know there was a time before I saw some of these things where I would have been like, well, I can never do that. Never be there. You know, I've never seen God stop the rain from coming. And that one stands out in my mind because it was a big deal to me. It was a really big deal to me. But more often than not, far more often than not, it's God, guide my hand as I make this stair nosing. Well, how many people noticed the stair nosing over at Norma? Me, probably. But God guided my hand while I made that. I still have all my fingers. That was me experiencing God. And there are other times when I totally forget that God's there. And that is what I'm really working on right now, is the awareness of the presence of God. And that doesn't mean that God stopped guiding my hand when I was doing something else, but I wasn't aware of it, so it didn't benefit me in that sense. And that's, so if you find yourself in a place where you're like, I don't know what these guys are talking about, I'm not there. Okay, where are you? And like Dana said, start with what you know. Start with where you are. But be challenged that what you know is not all that there is. And what I know is not all that there is. And what Dana knows is not all that there is. There's so much more of God. So, Bonnie?
One thing I've often struggled with is growing up, and just my mother that was like, well, God didn't answer my prayer the way I expected, and he must have walked away. And like, you know, it's like I often look back and think, God, like, you're suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that I'm the one that's far away. I've always done that, and that's God has me done, especially since Mike has preached about how that's God loving us. I'm like, there's no way. How can there be God? Uh-huh. I always run the opposite way. I run far, and I'm like, well, I must have done something wrong. I don't want to be in a relationship with you, or this must not be the time. Like, I need to go on my own, and like, you don't want me by you. I've always been just so twisted in that, in my thinking, and I'm so tired of that. And I've asked God to let me see him during the struggle, in the midst. And so with Cameron, I do pray very specifically. And there are days when I'm just like, God, I'm not seeing it. That you are working. I trust you. And I really, God is really teaching us to trust him even when it doesn't look like what we think it should. And Beth Moore has pointed out, Thessalonians, how Paul is writing how, you know, even if you don't, I know that you can. And it's a big difference. And even if it's not what we think it should look like, doesn't mean it isn't. And, but I will often pray very specifically, I need to find your working. And then I'm like, okay, now I'll be open to what it looks like. It will often be like, it'll be like a comment on Facebook. Just for example, so last week I was praying, like, Lord, this Holy Spirit, lay to my son, like, make him miserable. And I often make that miserable, but that's okay. And so I saw this comment, you know, he made some comment about how every time he hears a Christian song, it gets stuck in his head, and he has to dedicate the song to Satan, and then he's good. And I'm just like, oh, this just makes me so excited. I never taught you that. Like, where did you get that from? You know? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I prayed, didn't I? Yeah, okay, yeah, I did pray. This is you. You know, and then you talk about us seeing God and knowing God, and God has taught me how I feel a relationship with him to his people. And for a long time, I ran far away from people. And it's not about trusting people, it's about trusting God. To work through those people, and God has used so much of this time in our life to show us him, to his people, people that come alongside of us and love on Cameron and Megan. Caleb and Mary came over the other night, and it was such a blessing to have them interacting with Cameron and Megan. Will, you should run the other way, but never met them, and just they were there the whole evening, sitting there, and Cameron was so impressed that Caleb was so And that was my friend's last week. Mm. Over Cameron. And then to have Baxter again pouring into him, like, God, thank you that you burdened Baxter for my son. And like, we just often, well, for me, I run the other way, which is hard. I'm just, and I close my mind, I close my eyes, I close my heart. And I've just been asking God to show me not to do that. So when we are getting down and discouraged in our family, we're coming to each other and like, are you looking here? And we're just like trying to encourage each other. Lift your eyes to the zone. It's been such a struggle for me to see God in the suffering.
Yeah.
And that's where my practice time is well spent. It's like, yeah, maybe someday you'll get the best. It does look really messy most of the time. But this, and I remember reading Laura Story's awesome book about her husband's brain tumor. And she was like, why not us? Why wouldn't God choose? Why shouldn't God choose us? To suffer in a way so we would know him like, it's just this thing that God keeps putting in my life, like, whoa, you're blowing me away. Him, he's pointing and directing and guiding our path through his people, through his communication to us in so many different ways. I think I like to see God in the good results, in the good things that come. And it's really hard, like, you know, looking back and seeing, oh, there was a reason why I wrecked my car, but really, really being like, oh, he was gracious to give me a new one. And he pursued it. Maybe Father, that's not a good result in our mind. And it's been my practice to go back and look and find the good and see where he is working, even when, like Vaughn is saying, this doesn't look like what it should. And finding the good and finding God in what we think is bad. And when it's not the good results.
Speaking about that, I was taking a course in the Bible this past couple weeks on my phone. But anyway, but one of the last lectures, they had this woman talking about the prophets, and she's talking about Jeremiah and Lamentations and how they're so encouraging. And, you know, most people don't look at it that way because it's like saying, you screwed up and you didn't do what you're supposed to and you are being punished by God and it's your fault and you are in this horrible mess because you screwed up. And her point was, but if you listen to that, that's telling them it's not the gods of the nations that caused this to happen. It's not because these nations are bigger than you. It's not because of, you know, all these other external circumstances. It's because God is true to his word that this happened. And even in a horrible circumstance, you don't ever want, you know, you can see that God is real and God is true and God is faithful to his word. And that was really... that was intense for me to say, oh, okay, well, you know, that's an interesting way to look at it. But it's also the right way to look at it. That, you know, God said, this is my covenant. And she's talking about the covenant and how that makes, you know, Israel different than every other people group on the planet ever. And, you know, this covenant and how God always keeps the terms of the covenant. And so when it looks like it's failing, it's not because God failed. He's been true to his word. He said, this is what's going to happen. If you do this, this is what will happen. And so look, this happened. So what does that mean? It means God's word is true. And you don't, you're not a slave to circumstance, and you're not a slave to fate, and you're not being abused by foreign gods. You're reaping the result of God being faithful to his word. And that's amazing to me.
I think of a couple things as I listen to the conversations here. You know, one of them is how important it is for us to rehearse what God has done. And how important it is for us to rehearse the hurts and the trials. You know, because as a body, we have opportunity to encourage each other with that. But as we rehearse them, you know, God told the children of Israel, don't remove those late ancient lands. They're there for a reason. So you can go back and say, I remember when. And to hear other people's stories, and we start to think a couple of different things. One might be, oh, you too. That's me. Or another one might be, I've never experienced anything like that. God, what am I missing? I mean, there's so many things that come out of that hearing each other's experiences. Really, really a valuable thing. And, you know, for us to take the time to do that, I really, really appreciate. The other thing I have to think about is, you know, if the story that I rehearse is, well, I remember 23 years ago, I mean, you know, hopefully there's stories of this past week or this past 24 hours, those more recent, more current. And if all the things that I think of that I want to rehearse are from the ancient past, I have to ask myself, where was I then and where am I now and what's the difference? You know, those are things I think are important. The other thing I think about is hearing the voice of God. Think back to the days prior to caller ID, when you picked up your telephone and said hello, and you heard a voice, and you instantly knew who that was. because it was somebody you knew that you had a relationship with, that you had many conversations, you pictured their face, you knew who they were, as opposed to, you know, a salesperson who calls and that you hear this voice and it means nothing to you, you know. And I think we can correlate that to where we are,
mm-hmm.
where we live spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whose voice is this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how well do I know God? And then there are things we hear that, okay, this sounds like God's voice, but that's not what I expect God to say. But we can have confidence in that, right? Because we recognize that
mm-hmm.
voice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be doubts.
Yeah.
But that comes out of relationship. That comes out of knowing God.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know God? But to take those dedicated times.
Yeah.
You can't live in that IMI world or that Excel world.
Mm-hmm.
That's not real life. But to have those set-aside times where we can see God focused makes our experience with God more complete in all of us. You know, and that makes me think of something that Mike actually asked me to share, part of a conversation that we had on at Deacon meeting on Tuesday night. He was concerned for being gone a third Sunday in a row from our gathering time together. And the idea of being away, you know, but and I'm sure part of it is missing being here, but part of it was the circumstances of Mindy's dad and all those things that were part of that. I really appreciate Jonathan and Dana and those that are able to be able to lead this group in being together. But that was a concern to him. And as deacons, we basically said to him, you know what, your ministry in Wisconsin is an extension of our church, and that is where God has you right now. And there were so many pieces of that he was responsible for, whether it was graveside service or negotiating with the funeral director when they tried to charge three times what was expected. And there was many, many pieces that were part of that. And we just know that wherever Mike is, that he's ministering to his family and to those around him. And
mm-hmm.
we, as deacons, we're encouraging him that it's okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And God continues to work here. And think about the conversation that we're having even now. And it's okay. It's okay that God has put them in that place. And now for them to have this opportunity, and this has been planned for a long, long time, this time of being at this conference. We talk about those set-aside times and how God works in those times, you know? And we have the opportunity now and through the next few days to pray that God would use this time for Michael and Mindy as a time of refreshment. I think I appreciate their transparency. I think they're grieving well. But to use this time for refreshing, and,
mm-hmm.
and John and Kate and Ben and Bex that are there also, that this set aside, especially after what Michael and Mindy have been through,
mm-hmm.
we have an opportunity to really encourage them in that. But I'm just sharing with our body that Mike was concerned 2 weeks in a row. Is this okay? Yes, this is what God has called us to,
mm-hmm.
and it's fine.
Yeah.
But think about that in the context of what we're talking about this morning, and it all makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know if it doesn't get good.
Yep. Well, we're over. Anybody have anything else? Okay. Well, thank you for your participation, and I kind of share a little bit of what I'm thinking through right now, but that's what I've got. Let's pray and enjoy the rest of your day. Spend time with family, spend time with God. Father, thank you that you are near, that you are always near, and that you are always available to us. And that even when we are unaware of your presence, that you are still there and you still guide and you still protect. Father, thank you that you are, when we recognize that we are not with you, that you are there and immediately available when we turn to you. Father, thank you for your goodness to us. Thank you for your love. I ask that you would make us aware of your presence, that we would be in your presence with you, that you would be real to us. Thank you for this morning. Thank you for this church, this family, and the time that we can spend together talking about you and seeing you in each other and reflecting you. Father, I ask that we would not walk away and forget, but that you would continue to be with us as we remind each other of you as we go our way, and that every step would be with you. Thank you for your goodness to us. Thank you for today, and I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.